Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association. Missouri produces wood pallets, railroad ties, white oak barrels, hardwood floors, and more. Details on the variety of products made in the state are at choosewood.com.
From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Friday, April 19th. I'm Jonathan Aul. Ferguson Police Chief Troy Doyle says one of his first goals as head of the police department was to convince officers that the federal consent decree they're under is a good thing.
We're going to have the best policies and procedures probably in the region, you know, once we come into compliance with this consent decree.
St. Louis on the Air host Elaine Shaw spoke with Doyle on the one-year anniversary of his swearing in. That's coming up on The Gateway. The Missouri legislature passed an education bill that includes a litany of changes for public schools in the state. As St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Kellogg reports, that includes the expansion of charter schools in the middle of Missouri.
The bill would allow charter schools to be established in Boone County. No other counties in the state were added. The four Democratic representatives from Columbia spoke against the bill, including Representative David Tyson Smith, who called the bill poison.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill. We are hanging on by a razor's edge financially already. You bring charter schools into Boone County, which is what this bill specifically does, and it hurts us.
Also included in the bill is a recalculation of the state's public school funding formula to include school enrollment instead of just attendance, as well as an expansion to the state's tax credit scholarship program. In Jefferson City, I'm Sarah Kellogg, St. Louis Public Radio.
The backers of an effort to legalize sports betting in Missouri have gathered more than 300,000 signatures. The group Winning for Missouri Education said in a statement that they've eclipsed the roughly 171,000 signatures needed to appear on the ballot. If passed by voters, it would allow people to place sports wagers on, for instance, their cell phones. Missouri lawmakers haven't been able to legalize sports wagering, especially since some legislators don't want to take that step until they also legalize video lottery terminals. Groups seeking to place something on the 2024 ballot have until May 5th to turn in the signatures. The U.S. Justice Department settled a lawsuit with Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis for discriminating against an employee based on his citizenship status. St. Louis Public Radio's Andrea Henderson reports.
WashU's medical school has agreed to pay the affected worker back pay of about $3,300 plus interest. The school also agreed to pay the Treasury Department nearly $4,500 to settle the employee discrimination suit. The former employee of the medical school claimed WashU frequently asked for immigration and employee documentation. He says he was later fired for complaining. The Justice Department found that the employee was granted asylum by the federal government and had the right to work. The medical school didn't comment on the settlement. However, the settlement states WashU didn't admit to any wrongdoing and strictly denies the allegations of discrimination and retaliation against the employee. I'm Andrea Henderson, St. Louis Public Radio.
A man whose reckless driving caused a crash that seriously injured a teenage volleyball player will spend nearly 19 years in prison. Yesterday's ruling by Judge Michael Noble is in line with a recommendation from the jury that found 22-year-old Daniel Riley guilty of four criminal counts in April. Noble also ruled that the sentences will run back-to-back rather than all at once. Riley will also have to pay a $500 fine. Riley was violating the terms of his house release on a separate robbery case when he sped through downtown St. Louis on the night of February 18, 2023. His car crashed into another vehicle and then went airborne, pinning Janae Edmondson against a parked car. She had to have both legs amputated. Riley's case called increased attention to problems in then-Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner's office. She resigned under pressure 3 months later. The St. Louis Board of Aldermen this week unanimously approved a bill that would spend $800,000 of federal coronavirus relief funds to pay residents' medical debts. St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Fenton reports the city is one of many across the country planning to use American Rescue Plan funds for medical debt relief.
Proponents say the bill would cancel millions of dollars in unpaid bills, freeing residents of a heavy burden. The city would work with the organization Undue Medical Debt, formerly known as RIP Medical Debt, to buy bundles of debt at a reduced cost and pay it off. 14th Ward Alderman Rasheen Aldridge pushed back against a recently released report that found buying up old medical debt did little to improve credit scores and mental health of those receiving help.
And the conversations that I've been having with residents as these bills have been moving, they're happy that the Board of Aldermen in the City of St. Louis is using some ARPA funds to directly impact them.
A spokesman for Mayor Tashara Jones says she's considering the bill, which still needs her signature. I'm Sarah Fenton, St. Louis Public Radio.
It's been 1 year since Troy Doyle was sworn in as chief of the Ferguson Police Department. St. Louis on the Air host Elaine Shaw spoke with Doyle about the 10-year anniversary of the killing of Michael Brown Jr., recruitment efforts, and the federal consent decree the department is under.
Coming to Ferguson, we all know the history, what took place in 2014 with the uprising. When I got to the Ferguson Police Department, one of the things I initially recognized was the culture within the police department, a culture which they seen the federal consent decree as like punitive, so to speak. And one of the things I wanted to do was change that narrative and show them that, you know, the consent decree was a benefit to the city, you know, because at the end of the day, it's going to put us in a position where we're going to have the best policies and procedures probably in the region, mm-hmm. you know, once we come into compliance with this consent decree. So it's just changing the culture within the police department. Mm-hmm.
To what extent, then, did the Ferguson uprising affect the way that you saw your role or saw the role generally of law enforcement in a community?
Obviously, I mean, it prompted a lot of discussions. And I think it not only with me, but with my comrades across the country. I mean, we started having conversations about how law enforcement needs to change. And I think, you know, in fairness to law enforcement, we were all trained to be, you know, these tough guys. You go in these neighborhoods, you take care of business, and you go home. But I think that we failed to realize that there was a need in the community for sensitivity and, you know, cultural awareness and dealing with those type of issues.
Mm-hmm. Now, recognizing, Chief, that you are in a different role mm-hmm. and department than you were in 2014, do you approach what you're doing right now in Ferguson differently than the way that you approach things 10 years in the past?
I think so. And I think 2014 awakened many of us in law enforcement. And the good thing, I believe, that the city of Ferguson is getting with me coming in as a chief is that I had these experiences as a youth. I've been on the other side with St. Louis County Police Department on the, you know, law enforcement end of dealing with this. I can bridge those different perspectives together to be able to bring in, you know, my ideas and solutions that I believe that should be happening in the city of Ferguson.
Mm-hmm. Mike Brown Jr.'s killing, it sparked calls to shift the role of officers
yes.
from, you know, warriors to guardians. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that the training of officers here in our region since then reflects that?
I think so. Obviously, there's a whole lot more training that needs to take place. But one of the beautiful things about being on a federal consent decree, they demand a certain amount of training. So the Ferguson police officers have gone through diversity training, implicit bias training, use of force training. As I mentioned early on, once we get through this consent decree, the Ferguson Police Department is probably going to be one of the most trained police departments in the region.
What is it that new recruits are telling you, or what is it that you're hearing from them about why they want a career in law enforcement? And I mean, is there anything at all that's notable or surprising about what you are hearing?
Our department is probably one of the more diverse departments in the region now. Many of the officers that I've hired lately have been minority officers. And when you speak with them, many of them either have been through being harassed by law enforcement or either had a family member or a friend that went through that. So many of them are coming in the profession, want to be part of the change. Mm-hmm. So that's very encouraging to hear.
That's Ferguson Police Chief Troy Doyle. He spoke with St. Louis on the Air host Elaine Cha on the one-year anniversary of being sworn in as chief. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Jonathan All, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, providing more than 41,000 jobs in the production of wood pallets, railroad ties, white oak barrels, hardwood floors, and more. Details at choosewood.com.